Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Good morning. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert. We're speaking hope and freedom to Iran here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Good morning to everyone. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. I want to say once again, and I say this every program, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to The Cross in the Desert. I don't take that for granted. I hope your morning is going well. We have a very important show today. A little bit later in the next few minutes, I have a special interview with my dear Facebook friend, Sarah Brannick, who is just as passionate as I am about human rights in Iran. And we're going to be talking to her a little bit later about why she does what she does. We got some very important stories today. I'm going to be talking to you about the latest developments with Miriam Abrami in the Sudanese jail. We're going to also go back in time a couple of years to a very gruesome murder to an Iranian human rights activist, Galera, and we're going to talk about that as well. I've got some very special music from Matt Redman, Chris Tomlin. We're going to also revisit towards the end of the program my dear friends Miriam and Marzea and their important book, Captive in Iran, and there's a reason for all of that. I'll explain all of that later. What I want to do in these first few minutes, I want to reemphasize to you why I do what I do. And that may seem very basic, you know, why do I need to explain that? Well, because the Bible is my foundation for life, and it gives me reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing. The Bible is filled from beginning to end with admonitions to speak up for the voiceless, to take care of widows and orphans, to be a support and help to those who are impoverished, to those that are hurting and suffering. And I want to talk to you this morning in the next couple of minutes about two particular scriptures that is really the foundation for why I do what I do. In Proverbs chapter 31, verse 8, the command is speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Ensure justice for those being crushed. Yes, speak up for the poor and helpless and see that they get justice. The command and the admonition is to speak up. It's not enough to hear about the hurting and the suffering. And as important as prayer is to all of these situations, the Bible says not only to pray, but to speak up. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. There is a very fine ministry on Facebook called Voices of the Persecuted. And this is their scripture, and I love it. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. There are people that are voiceless, that are unable to speak up. And I'm thinking of the political prisoners in Evin prison. And there are ministries all over the world that speak up for them. And here as well on the cross in the desert, that's my job. That's my calling. That is my passion, to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. The next part of the verse says, ensure justice for those being crushed. In other words, in our speaking up, We are to make sure that justice comes to those that are oppressed. Well, how do we do that? Well, in human rights, we speak up by sending out petitions. And so you'll see on my Facebook page petition after petition to speak up for the voiceless. So it's not enough just to pray, but we need to speak up and then ensure justice, and that is by circulating petitions. And sometimes you may think, do petitions really make a difference? Well, let me give you a great example. The answer is yes. Just recently, the execution of Rahana Jabari was postponed. And I think largely the reason it was postponed is because of the petition that my dear friends Shabnam Assadali, Shadi Pave, and Nazanin Afshin-Jam circulated all over the Internet. Iran listened to that. I believe that. And I believe they know that there are thousands of people out there that oppose this execution, and they're listening. So the answer to your question is yes, it does make a difference. Petitions do make an impact, and what we do here on the Cross in the Desert is seek to make an impact on Iran, to put pressure on them about executions. Yes, speak up for the poor and helpless and see that they get justice. Again, the admonition is we're doing something. We're speaking up. We're putting our faith into action. There is another scripture I use a lot as encouragement to my Iranian friends. It's on a lot of my blogs, and I want to read this to you. It's Psalm 72, verse 12. And the writer of the psalm, Solomon, is saying to us that God is going to do something in our praying, in our speaking out. Psalm 72, verse 12, he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He will redeem, he feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. Very important verse. God promises to rescue the poor when they cry to him. And so while we're speaking out, God is also hearing the cries of the poor and the needy. And it says he will help the oppressed because they have no one to defend them. They're in a helpless situation. It also says something about our God that he feels pity for the weak and needy. And he promises to do something. He promises to rescue them. And I love this promise part of the verse. He will redeem them from oppression and violence. It's a promise. For their lives are precious to him. A great example of this is a few months ago when I had a book signing. Before the book signing, I had a Skype with one of my dear friends who lives in Shiraz, Iran. And I just asked her on this Skype interview, I said, and I'm not going to use her name, I call her Zara in this blog. I said, Zara, tell me, what does freedom mean to you? And what I want to do is I want to read to you this blog and read to you the answer that she gave me. Let me ask you, can you imagine living in a society where your every move and thought was monitored by the government? George Orwell's frightening novel, 1984, describes a society under the oppressive control of the government and prohibits free thought, sex, and any expression of individuality. They have even invented a language called Newspeak, which attempts to prevent political rebellion by eliminating any words relating to it. Even thinking rebellious thoughts is a crime, and citizens are constantly reminded that, quote, Big Brother is watching you. The description of this kind of society is unfortunately a frightening reality for my dear Iranian friend. But for security reasons, I will not mention her real name, but for the sake of my blog, I will call her Zara. Zara lives in Shiraz, Iran. She is divorced and has an 8-year-old boy and is struggling to raise him as a single mom. We are good friends. Regularly, we meet on Skype, and I spend time teaching her English in preparation for her exams at school. Recently, as we met on Skype, I asked Zara to talk about freedom and tell me exactly what life is like in Iran. Many of my Iranian friends have written short stories on the topic of freedom and emailed them to me. I have featured their stories on my radio program and in my blogs. However, in this case, I was able to interview my friend and to watch her facial expressions as she described her struggle for freedom in Iran, dramatically different than just receiving an email, and it had an incredible emotional impact on me. Zara rolled her eyes as she talked about the subject of freedom. You could see the pain and frustration in her eyes, and her whole countenance changed to despair. She explained that Iran was, quote, one big prison. Then suddenly her face beamed with hope as she looked me directly in the eyes and said, I want to be free, like a bird in the sky. Zara is not a practicing Muslim, but just in name only. Her biggest objection to the Iranian way of life is the government determining what you should believe. Religion is personal. The government doesn't have the right to tell you what to do, Zara objected. I could see the bitterness and frustration in her eyes. Then she gazed intently into my eyes with a passionate stare. Government chooses everything for us like a child. We don't have the right to choose. Zara paused for a moment, gathered her thoughts. Then she boldly proclaimed, freedom is our right. It is God's gift to us. I could not agree more. Iranians understand that freedom is a gift from God that has been stolen from them by a corrupt and power-hungry dictatorship. As our brief interview came to a conclusion, I informed Zara that I would be having a book signing from a new publication in a few weeks and asked her what message I could give to my customers from her. A huge smile beamed across her face, and without hesitation, she immediately responded and answered, tell them to please help us. We are prisoners here. Be our voice for freedom. And this goes back to what I just read to you. We are to be a voice for the hopeless and for the hopeless and the voiceless. And Zara is saying to you, if you're listening, we are prisoners here. Be our voice for freedom. Literally, Iranians really don't have the right to choose what to believe. A great example, if you're a Muslim living in Iran and you convert to Christianity, you have to do it secretly because the consequences of what you did is death if the government discovers it. They literally put to death Muslims who convert to Christianity. A great example of that is who we talk about every day here on the Cross in the Desert, Saeed Abedini. They have done everything they can to try to get him to recant and come back to Islam. And one of the ways they have used to do that, of course, is torture, beatings. Right now, our brother Saeed is suffering from internal bleeding simply because he refuses to turn to Islam. He is standing firm following Jesus. So in Iran, you don't have the freedom to choose. You don't have the freedom of a religion. An example of that is the Baha'i faith and the way they are treated. You see, the major religion in Iran is Islam. And if you are a Muslim, you have to stay a Muslim, even those in name only. This is required. Now, there's nothing in the constitutional penal code that says anything that I just said, but the clerics, the Muslim clerics practice Sharia law, and on each case, they decide on their own way and in their own wisdom. And the death penalty is usually the prescribed method for those that have converted from Islam to Christianity. And so there is no freedom of religion in Iran. Sometimes when I say this to my Iranian friends, they look at me like, are you sure about that? And yes, the prison cells are filled with not only political protesters, but for Muslims who have become Christians, awaiting their turn on death row. And this is a reality in Iran. And so I take very seriously what my friend Zara says to me. Be our voice for freedom. And that's what I do here on the Cross in the Desert. They don't have the freedom to choose. The government makes choices for them, says my friend Zara. That is actually true. Just recently we had six Iranians who gathered together on rooftops, produced a video, the happy video, the Pharrell Williams video, and within hours after producing this video about happiness, they were arrested, brought before the police, made to go on public TV and apologize. They were arrested because, largely, they made a video about happiness. Women without their hijabs, men dancing with women, this is against Islamic law. And there are rules to follow. So when I think of Iran, I think of a big prison, like my friend says. She says, Iran is one big prison. Be our voice for freedom. Government chooses everything for us like a child. I want to welcome right now to the Cross in the Desert my friend Sarah Brannick. And Sarah, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran.
Oh, thank you for having me, Randy.
Well, I was just finishing up talking about my friend Zara in Shiraz, Sarah, and how she describes Iran as one big prison with no freedom. You have a passion like I do, and you spend a lot of time on your Facebook and on your Twitter posting about the situation in Iran. So what I want to do for the benefit of our audience, Sarah, I just want you to have a couple of minutes and explain to me why do you have a passion for Iran? Why do you do this?
Well, they really need people to be a voice for them. I think most of them are, you know, really desire freedom. There's that over 100,000 are leaving Iran every year, and they're trying to get to America and places. And we really hope that, you know, they can achieve their freedom too. A lot of Americans are, you know, finding out that, you know, what's going on and are, you know, really supportive of them and really hope that they win their freedom.
Now, recently, you got behind the campaign to free Amir Hikmati, and you have spent an awful lot of time in your Facebook page posting hashtags for Twitter and talking about Amir Hikmati. Kind of inform our audience who Amir is, what is his situation, and what's going on in his life.
Well, he's American. He was born in Arizona, and he grew up in Michigan. And his parents immigrated from Iran before he was born. And when he was 28, he traveled there to visit relatives for the first time. He has aunts, uncles, grandparents, and he wanted to meet them. And on the last day, like right before he was going to fly home, he disappeared. And it looked like, you know, he'd been kidnapped. He was staying at his cousin's apartment, and when they went to go, or he didn't show up at a party or something, they went there and the door was broken open. It looked like there was signs of a struggle, like he'd been kidnapped and he was gone and some of his stuff was gone. And they found out months later he'd been arrested, and Iran was trying to charge him with being a spy and fighting against God. That's what the judge claimed in his sentence. So the judge gave him a death sentence, but, you know, that was overturned. He's been in prison since August 2011. And just recently, he handed in his request for a retrial. So his family currently are raising funds to help continue to fight for his freedom. And this is really important because his dad is also battling brain cancer. So financially, they say it's been really, really difficult. But since he's going to have this retrial and he has this lawyer, yeah, his family really needs funds. And if you go to my Twitter page or the Free Amir Hikmati page or their Facebook page, you'll find links for GoFundMe Free Amir, and it's real easy to get there. So, you know,
now,
they've asked people to share that. So,
Amir just passed a milestone on Memorial Day. He's been in prison now for 1,000 days. I can't imagine, Sarah, and I'm sure you can't either, what it's like to be in this prison cell, to be under torture and interrogation, and have this feeling of helplessness, and you haven't seen your family, and your father is battling brain cancer, adding insult to injury. I can't imagine the helpless feeling he must have crossing over 1,000 days in prison. But he has a very good friend who's a Marine himself that is fighting for his freedom.
Yeah, Terry Mahoney. The Amir Hekmati campaign is really grateful to him. He speaks out for Amir. He goes to the White House on his lunch break because he lives in D.C., and he tells people about Amir all day. Yeah, he's been a big asset to the campaign.
Now, since you have been on Twitter, Since you've been on Twitter, you have been able to get a lot of support for the various political prisoners that you're being a voice for. Before you came on, I was talking about the Bible saying that we should be a voice for the voiceless, and that's what you're doing as well. And you've been able to connect with a lot of followers on Twitter and make the cases of Iranian political prisoners known to them. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of, people that need people to be a voice for them. There's, I don't know, you want, can I talk about two?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, first I'd like to mention Bahar Hadaya. She's 33, and she's sentenced to 9.5 years, and she's on the Unlock Iran site if you go there. This site is really good. It's a global campaign, and it's led by the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center, and its main goal is to raise awareness about Iran prisoners of rights, and they're people that are just jailed for their beliefs or their lifestyles or professions, and they're artists, scientists, lawyers, pastors, and these people aren't criminals. They're just political prisoners, and they're prisoners of conscience. So you can really meet them and see their stories on this site. And one of the people on there is this Bahar Hadaya, and she's her sentence, the convictions really show that there's just no freedom of speech there. And she's, she's accused of insulting the president, insulting the supreme leader, for holding gatherings for, women who protest discrimination laws against women. And, conspiring against national security and things. And, in prison, she's denied basic rights, such as visitation with family, visit with her husband, rights to a lawyer, telephone calls. And she doesn't have adequate medical treatment, for her. She has, a medical condition, and if she doesn't have the right medical treatment, it can cause irreversible damage to her health. Most of the prisoners don't have any the adequate medical attention. So her situation is really serious.
Yeah, I want to add to what you just said about Bahar Hadaya. Of course, she's a champion for women's rights, and she was part of the student movement in Iran. And she has stood up tirelessly for the rights of university students, for the rights of women. She was part of what's called the Million Signatures campaign a few years ago that gained a lot of momentum in Iran. It was a campaign where it actually went around and gathered signatures for women's rights. Now, what that tells you, Sarah, is that the rights of women in Iran are vague. There are really no rights for women in Iran, and a great example of that is Bahar Hadaya, who is treated like a criminal simply because she voices her opinion. And I think the common charge that is leveled against anyone that disagrees is acting against national security. When you go to the Unlock Iran page, you see statistics and you see pictures of prisoners and you see their story there. And you're able, Sarah, to take their story and go to your Facebook page and make them known to your followers.
Yeah, and I also can have their story shared and spread around. And if you tweet them and, people keep sharing them, that, helps these people get their stories out, and that's how you can help. And that's how, back to Amir Hekmati's family, they said that, best way to help is to share a story, and every tweet, every post, every like, they said it does make a difference, and to please share and please be a voice for him. And he really needs to get back to his family because, he has a twin sister. They've missed two birthdays together. They share a birthday. And, coming up is her first birthday, and, it, you know, he's not home, so they won't spend their 31st birthday together. He has he lived with his older sister who's married and for a while, and she has two children. She says her two children ask, where is Uncle Amir? Why doesn't he ever come back? And they, you know, it's hard for them to explain where he is. So, you know, and his dad is battling brain cancer. But, can I talk about Hussein Renagi Maliki?
Yes,
go
right ahead.
On Wakiran. Yeah, he's his story's actually kind of famous, and he's a blogger, and he's 28, and he was arrested back in 2009 when he was 25. But his whole charges is just about against, you know, voicing his opinion and freedom of speech too. He was basically just blogging and sharing, you know, articles that kind of combat the Iranian oppression. And he would speak about, you know, situations in Iran and what the people of Iran must do to achieve, you know, human rights. And he was also a member of the group Iran Proxy, which allows access to, like, banned websites in to Iranians, you know, that they're not allowed on these websites, and that the government tells them what websites they can go on. So when he was arrested, though, he was in solitary for 13 months before he had even, you know, his trial, and then he was sentenced to 15 years, and he was charged with, yeah, propagating against the regime, insulting the supreme leader, insulting the president, and he has, since he's been in prison, his health has been really bad, like his kidneys got infected, and one of them shut down, so they had to remove one. He had over 5 surgeries. He's denied full medical treatment, and the prison officials, he went on a series of hunger strikes, you know, in response to this. And the prison officials just told him, oh, well, you'll just die in prison and everyone will forget, you know, so basically saying that they don't really care. But
that's interesting you bring up this point about dying in – go ahead. I was going to just say, it's interesting you brought up this point about dying in prison, because this is what's called silent execution. I had a guest on my program a few months ago, Shiva Mahbubi, who's head of the campaign to free political prisoners in Iran, and she said one of the most effective methods that Iranian regime uses if they don't execute the prisoners is to deny them medical care, and it's a form of silent execution. And just like you pointed out, it's very difficult to get any kind of adequate medical care. I want to just say something to what you said earlier about birthdays and Amir missing birthdays with his family. We just had Saeed Abedini turn 34 on May 7th, and this is the second birthday that he has missed with his family and his children, Rebecca and Jacob. And you're also involved with speaking out for Saeed like I am and helping out NGMA.
Yeah, and NGMA, I'm sure that those days are really, really hard for her. And she posts about, you know, how some days, you know, she feels like she couldn't even get up if it wasn't, you know, like – she says if God wasn't helping her, you know, just face each day and everything. If you send her messages, you know, she reads all of them, and she says, you know, she's even said in interviews on television, you know, I have people that message me and write me, you know, all the time and encourage me and are praying for me. And so that means a lot to her too. So, and you can write Saeed Abedini. Anyone can
write
him.
Do you have an address? Is this up on your page as well, so that people that listen to this broadcast can go to your page and see the posting for this address?
Yep. Yeah, if you just go to my my Facebook page, and I have a photo of Saeed, and it has on the side it has the address.
Yeah, it's just so our listeners know, your name is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Brannick, B-R-A-N-N-I-C-K. It's on my page as well, if they can actually go to your page. You spend an awful lot of time on the computer like I do, Sarah, and you're very passionate about what you do, because when I go to your page, you have updated stories, you have postings and pictures, you have a big picture of Unlock Iran. how do you manage your life? How do you find the time for anything else because you're so involved in what you do? Tell me why you're so passionate about this.
Well, I guess it all started with Saeed and, you know, seeing Amir's family and, you know, I see his mom, you know, Amir's mom was very emotional in one interview on television. I couldn't help getting emotional too. And she was, you know, crying and she was saying that, you know, he used to text her every day and tell her he loves her. And now, you know, they can't do that. And when he was home, he would just hug her and tell her, I love you, Mom. And, you know, they were very, very close family. And, you know, and then I see Nagme on television, and sometimes she gets, you know, starts to get emotional, or I just hear the emotion coming into her voice, and it's like, you know, I don't know, you just sometimes feel like you can't just stand by. You have to get involved and try to help these people and help, you know, rake in more support for them and their situation. And that's just how I feel.
I understand your feelings because I feel the same way, too. My passion comes from a situation, Sarah, that I've mentioned many times here before. My passion comes from seeing the video of Neda Sultan, who during the presidential election in 2009 was shot down by a Basiji man in the alleyways of Tehran, and she was peacefully protesting, and this man came by, I think he was riding on a motorcycle or he was on a rooftop, we're not really sure, fired a single shot into her chest, and you can see this video of Neda being on for life and those huddled around her trying to revive her. And it was that video, Sarah, that had such an impact on me, just like when you saw Nagma and Amir's mother on TV. It had such an impact on me. This is the reason I do what I do for Iranians. So you too share the same passion that I have. What can you share with other Facebook people that why we're doing this is to make a difference in the lives of these people? And what would you share about what you've learned so far of being a human rights activist with other Facebook friends? Let's start with your family. What did they think about you becoming involved in human rights? What is their reaction to you?
Well, some of them are, like, you know, really into it, too, and they always ask me for updates, and they, you know, say, like, what should we pray for, you know, and what's going on now? And so a lot of my Facebook people are, you know, like, thank you, I haven't heard about this yet, you know, I'll be praying, and I'll, you know, spread this news, or I'll share this story, you know, with my friends. And so I think a lot of people feel like, you know, yeah, these are just people like you and me, and, you know, we don't want to ignore their problems. And just, you know, how do you go on with your life? How do you enjoy, you know, everything when you know that there's innocent people just like me or you and they can't?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What has this taught you about looking at your own personal freedom when you think of the oppression of Iranians all over the world? You see their situation. I'm sure you get involved with their stories. How does this make you feel about your own personal freedom compared to what they're going through?
Well, it makes it look a lot more precious, and you don't take it for granted, you know. And, yeah, like going out to eat with, you know, friends, it's like sometimes, you know, you'll be in a restaurant, you know, it's real busy and crowded, everybody's laughing and talking, and, you know, it's just you looking around, and you're like, you know, I can't believe I'm here, you know, and, you know, just able to, you know, do this. It just makes everything seem a lot more, you know, enhanced, like, and it, you know, and you just wish you could share it with everybody that you know, learned about.
Right. You know, one of the things this has taught me, being involved in human rights, I'll have those days, I'm sure that you have, where you have little trials, little aggravations, little things that go wrong that just get you angry. And when I find myself complaining about the basic little aggravations of life, I just stop. And I think, this is nothing. This little inconvenience is nothing compared to what my Iranian friends are going through every day. Have you had that same situation?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It puts things in perspective, and actually you start focusing a lot less on things that would have upset you, you know, like minor things, they don't upset you anymore, and you think of them a lot less. But when something does upset you, and sometimes I'm like, you know, this is crazy. Why am I mad about this? You know, when, you know, it's not like, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure all of our friends that we, you know, that we write about, you know, I mean, would rather trade places with us.
Exactly, exactly. Now, in fact, you know, since you've been doing this, you actually become friends with a couple of very prominent people, which are friends of mine as well, and I'm speaking about Miriam Rostampour and Marzia Amirzadeh, the authors of Captive in Iran, who were in an Iranian prison, Evin prison, 5 years ago on death row for distributing Bibles. And so actually through your experience here, you've made some pretty good friendships.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have met them. And they tell me, too, like, you know, we're really glad to be friends with you. And it's kind of interesting. I was posting about a lawyer who, you know, was, to me, I was like, you know, oh, this guy's a hero and everything. You know, he helped found this organization to defend people without rights, like, you know, religious minorities, you know, and like Baha'is and Christians and also that are persecuted, and they're just put in prison just because of their beliefs. And also he would defend women and, you know, just people that were given no rights in Iran, and he would do it free of charge. And his last name is Sultani. Well, anyways, Miriam and Marzia informed me that this was their first lawyer. So I thought that was pretty amazing that he was actually their lawyer.
And now
so
he
he's
is
in prison
trying
now
to,
because, he was doing that, and they said that, you know, he was defending these people that are considered, you know, enemies of, you know, the state.
Well, what I want to do right now is ask you to just speak to those that are listening right now to our program and just kind of give us some closing remarks there. What would you tell those that listen to our program here, The Cross in the Desert? What would you say to them about human rights and how they themselves can get involved?
Well, spreading the news, it saved lives before. And, you know, if you make the stories more and more public, sometimes, you know, that will bring results quicker. And there was a pastor that was going to be executed, but, you know, everybody jumped all over it, and he was, you know, able to go free. So, you know, and then there's been other stories of people who are going to be executed, and everybody launched a campaign and signed petitions, spread the word, you know, and made it go viral, and then the executions were halted and, you know, postponed. And, you know, it just, it really does help if you speak out and, you know, speak out for other people.
Right, and referring to executions, I'm thinking of what you're referring to, those being postponed, is the case of Rahana Jabari, who is on death row because she's defended herself against a rapist, and in the process she stabbed the rapist and he died. And she's on death row for defending herself against a rapist. And many, many petitions have been out there, Sarah, and her execution at this point is still postponed. But certainly we shouldn't stop speaking out for her just because it's postponed.
Yeah, we hope it will. We hope it will develop where, you know, she'll eventually be able to go free. But she doesn't deserve to be in prison. She definitely doesn't deserve death row.
Well, and any closing remarks, any words of admonition that you have for us before I go on?
Well, I would just encourage people to help with the Amir Hekmati campaign because the new development where they're going to try a retrial, you know, and also remember these names, too, when you pray. Just, you know, Bahara Hadea. Remember Bahara, remember Hussein, and remember Amir, and just, you know, keep those three names in prayer. And the
as well
family
as
has already
Abedin.
Asked, you know, do that.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So that's very
yes,
important
that
what you said there. It's very important that you mention prayer, because we do speak out, we do sign petitions, but we can never minimize the importance of prayer. It's very valuable. It's our greatest asset and weapons to lay before the Lord our prayers for these prisoners' freedom. I want to thank you, Sarah, for taking out of your time and joining me on the Cross in the Desert. If you want to interact with Sarah, go to her Facebook page, and also you're on Twitter, and people can reach you there. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being on the Cross in the Desert. God bless you, and have a great, great day.
You too, Randy. Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day. Well, there you heard it from someone that is involved with human rights. She's a very young girl, and she's very passionate and very eager, and she's very good at what she does. She writes a lot of good postings on her Facebook page and her Twitter account. She's very passionate. So I'm very glad to meet someone that has the same passion that I have on the Cross in the Desert. We're going to take this short music break, and we're going to come back with some of the most important stories of the day. I want you to hear right now a great song from Matt Redman's latest worship project. This is a song called Mercy, right here on the Cross in the Desert.
I will kneel in the dust at the foot of the cross, where mercy paid for me, where the wrath I deserve, it is gone, it has passed, your blood has hidden me. Mercy, mercy, as endless as the sea. I'll sing your hallelujah for all eternity. We will lift up the cup and the bread we will break, remembering your love. We will fall from grace, but you took all our shame and nailed it to a cross. I'll sing your hallelujah. dust at the foot of the cross, where mercy paid for me.
On the cross in the desert, there are no words to describe the beauty of this song, Mercy by Matt Redman. When I think of mercy, that's who God is, mercy. On my Facebook page, I have a photograph. It's very graphic, and I don't just post things to make some kind of emotional appeal to people. It's a picture of Farzana Parveen. Farzana Parveen lived in Pakistan. She was the victim of a brutal honor killing. She was stoned. Did you know in Pakistan, 59% of the women are illiterate? 90% of women experience domestic violence, and 1,000 honor killings take place a year in Pakistan. One of those was just this past week. Farzana Parveen, dead from stoning in the streets in broad daylight, stoned by 20 of her family members. This is premeditated murder, but in Pakistan, it's acceptable, apparently. And when you look at this precious girl, a victim, lying in the streets, you ask why. What was the reason for it? Farzana married someone that the family disagreed with. And there are some postings underneath this picture from my Facebook friends. I want to read a couple. My friend Hala says, horrible and heartbreaking. And my friend John says some very important words. He says, her chances of seeing God are far greater than those who threw those stones. And John also writes, in their mind, that what was done is right and proved their love for Muhammad, and their own fresh flesh and blood is like filthy rags and means nothing to them. I want to take you to this horrible, tragic story right now about Farzana Parveen. This is a BBC report of her stoning right here on the cross in the desert.
Murder on the streets of Lahore. In broad daylight, a woman in love and pregnant stoned to death. No one intervened to help. Farzana Parveen was only 25. Her bereaved husband, Muhammad Iqbal, will now have to bury her and their unborn child. Women on the scene were mourning in front of the victim's shrouded body, and they were in shock. This could happen to any of them. The couple were on their way to court. They'd married against the wishes of Ms. Parveen's parents, unthinkable in a deeply conservative country. Her family filed a case for abduction against Mr. Iqbal, and the newlyweds were coming to court to contest it. 20 members of her family were waiting here. They tried to snatch her away from her husband. When she resisted, they started pelting her with stones until she collapsed dead. Ms. Parveen's father surrendered after the attack, but all the others got away. In the aftermath of the stoning, condemnation and indignation. So-called honor killings are common in Pakistan, but stoning in public, that's another level of horror.
It's called honor killings, and I always use that in quotation marks because it's actually this concept that the honor of the family resides in the woman's body, that the woman is a repository of honor of the family and the community. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, she has a right to make her own decisions about her own life.
Many here in Pakistan are calling this case already premeditated murder. Unfortunately, in past cases of so-called honor killings, the attackers got off very lightly. The question now is, will the revolting aspect of this public stoning make a difference, a positive difference, to the way justice is delivered for women in this country? Kim Ghattas, BBC News, Islamabad.
This is a horrible tragedy, and can you imagine being lured to a courtroom and you're walking with your husband that you chose to marry, and standing right there in front of this courthouse are members of your own family and they lift up rocks and begin to stone you in broad daylight in public. The practice of stoning is in Iran, it's in Afghanistan, in Saudi Arabia, in many, many of the Muslim-controlled countries. This is a barbaric, barbaric form of capital punishment that we must put an end to. There has not been enough done in this area, but we must do more. We must speak out more about this horrible practice. And this is an example right there in front of your eyes on the other side of the world in broad daylight when you're not safe and you're put to death because you made a choice to marry outside of your family's wishes. This kind of barbaric practice must be put to an end. Somehow, some way, we must say enough, speak out enough, petition enough to put an end to this ungodly, barbaric practice. Farzana made a choice. Her family didn't like choice. And their answer, instead of accepting it, was to kill her. And this is inhumane. Well, I want to mention to you now about the case of Maryam Yahya Ibrahim, who is a Sudanese woman sentenced to death for apostasy in the Sudan. She married a Christian man. She was raised by largely her Christian mother. Her dad was not there all the time. He was a Muslim. And they have decided because she was born into this family that was both Islamic and Christian, because her father was, that she herself must also be considered a Muslim, even though she was raised by her Christian mother. And recently she got married, and now she's in a similar situation. In the Sudan, she was arrested and put in prison and sentenced to death for the crime of apostasy. This is a very well-known story. She's 27 years old. She was pregnant, and I want to announce to you some good news for her. She gave birth to a little girl this past Tuesday in the hospital wing of a prison in Amaramam. And it's really a delightful thing. I mean, this is a wonderful, I guess, bright spot in this darkness that she's going through. And her husband wasn't allowed to visit her. And her baby girl is named Maya. Her attorney says she's fine and Miriam is well, too. But here's what's going to happen. She has a 20-month-year-old son. She just gave birth to a baby girl, and now the government is requiring that she be lashed 100 times. And I cannot explain to you how difficult this is for me to comprehend. At the age of 27, you're in prison. You just gave birth to your second child. You're going to be lashed 1,000 times, and within 2 years after nursing your newborn, you're scheduled to be executed. So it is horrible. And what I like so much about Miriam is that she, like many other Christians, refused to recant. If she had recanted, she would have been set free. There would be no death sentence. She'd be out of prison. But because she loves Jesus, because she has found the truth, she has refused to recant. And she told the judge, I've never been a Muslim. I was raised a Christian from the start. Now, Amnesty International, the United States Department, State Department, and lawmakers are quickly condemning this sentence, calling it an affront to religious freedom. The refusal of the government of Sudan to allow religious freedom is one of the reasons for Sudan's long civil war. And this is what's been going on. And the State Department has demanded that Sudan reduce its sentence of death against Miriam immediately. So we continue to also speak out and pray for this precious Christian lady and her husband who's not been allowed to visit her. There is a petition on my Facebook page. You can get involved in signing this. The American Center for Law and Justice is very much involved in this case as well. So, again, you have the opportunity to be a voice for the voiceless, which is what my program is about, by signing the petition on my Facebook page for Miriam Ibrahimi. And we must do everything we can by the grace of God to stop this execution from taking place within a couple of years. We have time to do something. And in the case of Miriam, we have a little bit of time on our side. And so we must do everything we can to speak out against this injustice. And speaking about injustices, just a couple of years ago, an Iranian activist who came here to find freedom and a new life in the United States, moving to Houston, Texas, was brutally killed and murdered. And I want you to hear this story. It's very sad, and then I'll come back and make some more remarks on it here on the cross in the desert.
And now to exclusive details on a federal raid in Montgomery County.
Several people were arrested today as part of a fraud investigation, but we found that one of them is also charged in the murder of an MD Anderson medical student who was shot and killed 2 years ago.
The FBI raided three different locations today on properties in and around Conroe. We're talking White Oak Drive, Irwin Keel, and Old Houston Road. We have live team coverage starting with our Kevin Reese. Kevin, what do you know?
We're at the address on White Oak Drive. This is where Ali Ersan was arrested early this morning. Neighbors say they watched as the suspect, his wife, and teenage son were surrounded and arrested by deputies as they arrived at this home. Now, neighbors here at the White Oak Drive address, again, one of three that are being searched today, say they have been suspicious of this family for years now. And after the 2012 murder of medical student and Iranian activist Gelareh Bagarzadeh, Houston police did search this same property on White Oak Drive then. A neighbor told police where he had seen Ersan burying something in his backyard at 3 in the morning. Police did search the yard 2 years ago, but we have no official confirmation on what they found then. Now police are digging through three properties connected to this family, again with metal detectors and shovels. Officially, this is part of a fraud investigation, but the primary suspect, Ali Ersan, is also now charged with murder.
First time I met him, he was bragging to me about how he shot somebody and killed somebody.
I knew there was something not right, but not sure what. He was always coming and goings, and they're always locking the gate. And they're very suspicious people. They watch everything they do.
And neighbors say that after that first search of this property 2 years ago, Ersan quickly made a privacy fence that included this hand-painted sign. It says, if you have neighbors like ours, do like us. Essentially, build a fence and mind your own business. As for a potential motive in this case, they say that Ersan and the political activist, that medical student, argued about her political activities in the past. They were distant friends of the family, and they say that that may be the potential motive, but that's the one they've been talking about for 2 years now. But as of this morning, Ali Ersan now charged with her murder. Live in Conroe, Kevin Reese, KHOU, 11 News.
From that close call to an FBI raid at a family's home near Conroe, agents were looking for evidence of fraud, but today's raid also uncovered a suspect in the notorious murder of a medical student near the Galleria. Our Tiffany Craig has more.
While federal investigators combed through three properties near Conroe, Fatan Kasbidi was breathing a sigh of relief.
I just want her soul to be in peace, and I want her family to be in peace.
Because at least part of that massive raid was to arrest a murder suspect charged with killing her friend, Gelareh Bagarzadeh, in January 2012. She was shot to death in her car in the Galleria area.
And they were on him in a heartbeat. They swarmed him.
William Orr watched as investigators took Ali Ersan into custody, along with his wife and a teenage son, on fraud charges. Two younger men were put in a Houston patrol car at another address where the family has lived for about 20 years with a dozen or so kids.
They're always coming and goings, and they're always locking the gate. And they're very suspicious people. They watch everything they do.
Now investigators are going through just about everything. William says Ersan once told him about something much more troubling than fraud.
First time I met him, he was bragging to me about how he shot somebody and killed somebody.
Even though all that activity was going on, Fatan is still haunted by one thing.
My main question was why, rather than who. You know?
We know Ersan's daughter and Gelareh were both MD Anderson students and friends. Neighbors say he didn't like that the women had converted from Islam to Christianity, and Gelareh was very outspoken about it.
We should learn much more about Ersan and that murder charge when he goes to court. One other interesting note, if you remember, Crime Stoppers was offering its largest reward ever for information in the Bagarzadeh murder. It turns out this didn't come from a Crime Stoppers tip, so no one will get that reward of $200,000. Live downtown, Tiffany Craig, KHOU, 11 News.
Gelareh came from Iran to the United States in hopes of a new life and freedom, where she could practice her human rights without fear, here in the United States. And she was very outspoken, a devoted Christian, and she had been a significant influence on this man's daughter. What I find so horribly and so I can't think of the word right now, just so contradictory. The Muslim holy book, the Quran, says, let there be no compulsion in religion. Very clearly, it's making the statement that religion is a personal thing. You shouldn't force someone to believe a certain way. This is the teaching of the Quran in the early chapters of the early career of Muhammad. Let there be no compulsion in religion. If that is true, and that is what the Quran teaches on various places in the surahs, then that would seem to me to be something that Muslims have to obey. Let there be no compulsion in religion. So then why is this Muslim man from Jordan not respecting what his own Quran teaches and taking the life of this innocent Iranian activist? There should be no compulsion in religion, and yet he kills her. This continually happens all over the world. In the case of Miriam, there should be no compulsion in religion. She's a Christian. They should respect her religious freedom, but she's going to be executed because she's not a Muslim, because she converted. And in the same case of Galera, no respect for her religious freedom. What is so sad is that she came here to practice her human rights, to live a new life. She's sharing the most precious thing in her life with her best friend, and she ends up being murdered for that. It's so sad, but this is what goes on. And I'm very grateful there has been an arrest in this case, and I hope this man understands the reasons for why he was arrested and the consequences you must pay for taking a life and not respecting someone's religious freedom. Well, what I want to do now is take another break before we come to the concluding part of today's special Crossing the Desert program. I want you to hear one of my favorite contemporary Christian artists. At the 2014 Passion Conference, this is an incredible song I hope is inspiring to you. I hope this challenges you to think more about how holy and awesome our God is. Right now on the Crossing the Desert, let's listen to Chris Tomlin and a song called Almighty.
You have no rival, you stand alone. The heavens worship before your throne. There is no one like you. You have no equal, your kingdom reigns. Yours is the highest of every name. There is no one like you. Almighty,
I hide my eyes and I tremble before it. I tremble before
it. I see the Holy One high and exalted. I hide my eyes and I tremble before it. I tremble. Join with those saints who've gone before us, the saints all around the world today. The worship around the throne of God, let's just sing that.
Almighty, we're standing in the presence of your might. Your hope.
Incredible worship from Chris Tomlin, Almighty, from the 2014 Passion Conference. I've never had an opportunity to see him, but everyone I've talked to talks about how it's not a concert. It's a great worship experience when you go to see Chris Tomlin. And after listening to that clip, I can hardly agree. It is a worship experience. He puts such beautiful words describing our great God. Our great God is sovereign and all-powerful, but one of the most important attributes is our God is a God of love. I have some comments here from my dear Iranian activist friend, Shadi Pavey, talking about the stoning of the Pakistan woman. I want to read these to you. They are excellent points that she's making. Speaking about Farzana Parvan being stoned in Pakistan, here's what Shadi says. She says, there is nothing in the Quran regarding honor killings. However, the way Islam speaks of women, such as their worth being half of a man's, women needing husbands' permission to even travel outside their city, women getting much less inheritance than their brothers or male children, women not being allowed a divorce or child custody, and so on and so forth, may give rise to women being seen as nothing more than property of a man in uneducated, poor, overpopulated countries where life is worthless anyway, let alone a woman whose life, which is just worth half or nothing. This sort of thing can only be stopped by a cultural revolution, vast intensive education, and most importantly, a judicial system that does not look the other way. Sadly, it will take two generations to put a stop to such heinous, unspeakable earth, and that's the words of my friend Shadi Pavey. Some very important insights to the viewpoint of how a woman is looked upon in these kind of countries, these kinds of stereotypes of women, not allowed to travel alone, not allowed to leave their country, having to have their husband's permission. They are reduced to nothing more than property. I want to just talk to you a few minutes here about this important month of May. It's a very important month for me because it was 4 years ago in 2010 on the month of May where I had my first book published, Beyond the Veil. I have a copy of it here right in my hands. It is a book about my character Nadia, a young Muslim girl living in Bangladesh who has a vision of Jesus. Muslims are having visions of Jesus these days, and it's changing their lives. In my story, she has a vision of Jesus. She doesn't know how to respond to this, but one day a Christian man living in the United States sponsors her through an organization to be a sponsor to provide financially for her, and she writes her sponsor a letter and describes this experience of Jesus. And my book goes from there describing this relationship between a young Muslim girl living in Bangladesh and this Christian musician, a child sponsor taking care of her, living in the United States. And it's the story of their friendship. Well, this is really a special month. I wrote this book because of what I saw of the plight of Muslim women all over the world. And this is the reason why Beyond the Veil became a book in print. Beyond the Veil, the subtitle is Where We Can See God Clearly. I chose that title on purpose. Knowing about the hijab and the veil, I was saying Muslim women can look beyond their veil. They will see a God of great grace and love. And there's a song I wrote about this experience. And I want to read to you just a few of the lyrics to that song so I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. There's only one thing that I desire and one thing that I seek after, to gaze upon your beauty, O Lord, to see you face to face. I want to behold your glorious face. I want to see you face to face. You opened up the way when your hands and feet were nailed. Now I can see your face beyond the veil. I want to touch your face with these hands that are frail. I long to see your face beyond the veil. I want to see your glorious face and be transformed by your infinite grace. This is my prayer for Muslim women all over the world. My prayer for those that are struggling, that are hurting, that are being oppressed, that are crying out for justice. I pray that they will someday face to face see Jesus beyond their veil and see in Jesus that hope for freedom, that hope for love and forgiveness that they are so desperate for. But in this system, this religious system, they are trapped beyond the veil. And one day I pray that Jesus will lift the veil of these Muslim women and reveal himself to them. The month of May also is a very special month because it's the month that my dear Facebook friends, Miriam Rostampour and Marzia Amirzadeh, were able to leave Iran completely. It was May 2010. They had just been miraculously released from Evin prison, released from the sentence of death, but as they left to their home in Tehran, they were going to have to face another trial, and this could have mean a lot of jeopardy for them. And so I remember from about January to May, I prayed fervently for Miriam and Marzia to be completely exonerated of all charges against them. And I'll never forget the day that I got an email from Alam Ministry saying that Miriam and Marzia had finally left Iran and gained their complete freedom. They are precious friends, and I have had the opportunity to chat with them on Facebook and, most importantly, to read their book, Captive in Iran. What I want you to hear right now on The Cross in the Desert is this very special interview with Miriam and Marzia speaking about their book and talking about the persecuted church right here on The Cross in the Desert.
Hi, my name is Maryam, and I'm from Iran.
Hello, my name is Marzia, and I'm from Iran, too. We both converted to Christianity 14 years ago. We met each other in 2005 while we were studying theology courses in Turkey. Then we decided to go back to Iran to serve our people because we knew how much the Iranian people are thirsty to hear about God's grace and love. As you know, there is no freedom in our country. There is no hope for people's future. The young generation in our country are so hopeless. They are tired of the wrong rules of Islam and just following the religious rules. Most of the people are under so much pressure and stress because of the government inhuman rules, and they are so depressed. When we talk to them about Jesus and the message of salvation, people, especially the young generation, was so open and eager to hear more about Christianity because Jesus' message is about love and grace, which is completely different from teaching of Islam.
Yes, you know, in Iran there is just a false and distorted version of Bible, and people cannot find the real version of Bible. We both had this passion in our heart to put the real Bible in people's hands. So when we returned to Iran for the first 2 years, we distributed 20,000 New Testaments in Tehran and in a few other cities. We divided the city into squares on a huge wall map. At night, we carried 140 books each in our bags, visited one area at a time, and put the New Testaments in mailboxes. Furthermore, we were evangelizing people every day. Whenever we went for shopping, eating at restaurants, or doing our chores, we were talking to people about Jesus and handing them a Bible as a gift. After that, we started two house churches, one for prostitutes and one for young people, in our own apartment. You know, all these activities are illegal in Iran because no one is allowed to promote any other religion except Islam. Finally, the government found out about our activities, and they arrested us in March 2009. They sent us to Evin, one of the most notorious prisons in Iran, for charges of anti-government, blasphemy, apostasy, and promoting Christianity in Iran.
You know, first week, especially the first day, was awful. For the first few weeks, we were just praying for our release. Because the condition was so difficult. We had long hours of interrogation, which was like a mental torture. And also they threatened us to physical torture. For example, one day they sent us to a dirty cell in a basement and told us, you must give us all the information about your friends, otherwise we will beat you until you vomit blood. At that time, we were so scared, pale, and even we couldn't talk. The only thing that we could do was praying for each other, and the Holy Spirit really strengthened us. when we could see God's miracles and how he was using us to give his message to our fellow prisoners, it was so encouraging. And we could trust God's plan for us even in prison. During the time that we were in prison, we experienced the new meaning of the church. The Iranian government had tried to silence us by keeping us in prison. But we had more opportunity to talk to people and to give the message of salvation to our fellow prisoners. Even though we were in prison, but we were free. And we experienced that the church is not just about a building. Everywhere can be a church, even a dark and brutal place like Evin prison.
Yeah, you know, at the beginning they were supposed to execute us by hanging, but because of all the international pressures and especially the support of all Christians from all around the world, they had to release us because the Iranian government wanted to show the world that there is religious freedom in our country, which is not true, and still many people are in prison because of their faith. After we got released in November 2009, we had to leave our country because we couldn't stay in Iran and live as Christians and continue our mission. So we moved to Turkey. As soon as we got to Turkey, we started writing the story of our imprisonment and also the stories of many women whom we believe that they were the victims of the Iranian government and the wrong rules of Islam, because we promised most women in prison to be a voice for them by sharing their stories. When we moved to the U.S., we found a very good publisher, and they helped us to publish our book, which is called Captive in Iran, and it was released on the 2nd of April, 2013. Today, we are living in the U.S., a free country, and we really praise God for this freedom. Our goal here is to be a voice for those who are still in persecution by spreading the message of our book, and also to share how the Lord has been working in our lives with the American church. We both feel responsible, and we want to inform other nations about what is going on in countries like Iran.
And you know, our message to the church in America is that don't take your freedom for granted. In many countries like Iran, people are suffering because of the lack of freedom. They don't have any voice. They don't have any rights. They cannot even choose how to worship God or how to think. They had to hide their beliefs. Otherwise, they would end up to a jail or would die. We both believe that the freedom that we have in this country is really a blessing and a valuable gift from God.
And we should know that this is Jesus' greatest command to each one of us to go to the world and make people his disciples. We all should feel responsible, and we need to use this freedom, and we should pray in order to be a tool in God's hands to give his message to other people and to other nations, especially to those people who live in the persecuted countries. We believe that our voices together can make a huge difference.
I can't recommend more highly this book, Captive in Iran. It was a life-changing book for me. It challenged my Christian faith like no other book outside of the Bible. This book is a remarkable story of hope and triumph amid the horror of Tehran's brutal Evin prison. God actually gave Miriam and Marzia a church pulpit in their prison, and they were able to talk to every kind of prisoner there and share the hope of Christ. Can you imagine this? They were put in Evin prison to be punished for the crime of distributing Bibles, and yet in prison, they turned that prison cell into a place of evangelism. It is a remarkable story. It is inspiring. It is convicting. It has a chapter in there where Marzia shares her story. Then it will shift to what Miriam says. It is an incredible book. And I had the privilege of interviewing Miriam and Marzia on my Cross in the Desert program back in September. I hope to have them on soon again. They're very busy going all over the country giving speaking engagements at churches, book signings. It's amazing to see how God has so powerfully used them. With their book being released last April of last year, they've been on Fox News. They've been in important places all over the United States. They've been at the Billy Graham Library. They've been so many places. One day, by the grace of God, I hope to meet these ladies because they have been such a tremendous impact on my life, such a life-changing impact. And I'm so thankful that 4 years ago this month, God truly answered my prayers for Miriam and Marzia. Millions of people were praying for them. But 4 years ago this month, they were able to finally leave Iran. And I'm just very, very, very grateful to how God has powerfully used them in the lives of us. Remember what Marzia said, and it's so important. Don't take your freedom for granted. Because it's so important when you think of what they endured and what Iranians are enduring, we can't take our freedom for granted. We have no idea what it's like to live under the oppression and fear that they lived under. I would remind you to please continue to keep Saeed Abedini in your prayers. Go to the BeHeardProject.com. Sign the petition if you've never done so before. Keep Amir Hekmati in your prayers. Thank you very much, Sarah Brannick, for being a guest on my program today. I appreciate your hard work and passion for Iranians. I want to thank you as well for tuning in. Thank you, Vito Esposito from the Radio Jihad Network. I will see you very soon. Thank you for all the hard work that you're doing to spread your message on the Radio Jihad Network. God bless you. I will see you very soon again on the cross in the desert.
Healing rain is coming down, it's coming nearer to this old town, to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long. Healing rain is coming down, it's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus. Be